Well, it's an honor to introduce C. C, besides these titles, she's been with UIC for over 35 years. And as a student, what, another...
Oh, yeah, I forgot that part.
Yeah. all the years that she was here obtaining her various degrees. She's also been, I don't know if people are aware, the Miles Square Center. She was director of that, which is the largest. It's more than a clinic, actually,
yes.
Right? You know, it's a full health, almost a small hospital, if you will. And was a vice chancellor for, was it health promotions?
Community health.
Community health, I've been working with her for at least 11 years, maybe 12, when she came to GCI, and we brought together all her projects, which you're going to learn about, with the Neighborhoods Initiative that we had at that point, and merged them. And so we've been working together for a good 12 years, and she's brought the whole health perspective to all this work. And as you're going to see in her presentation, the health work she does is really diverse and varied, and sort of shows the breadth of what health can be. But anyways, it's been wonderful working with her. But anyways, I'll let C. Boyd take it away.
Thank you. When Dr. Judd asked me to do this, he actually posed the request in a very interesting way. Not to come necessarily and talk about our programs or projects or what we do, but more of the why of what we do it. And as a result of that, I think you'll understand what we've selected to do in meeting our goals, core values of the Neighborhoods Initiative, and the university's mission. So that's the perspective I'm going to take. And Kate, I will talk about what I'm doing, but in kind of a different way, because I actually liked that question, because I think it's important to understand the why we choose to engage in different aspects of our work. I think it will help in understanding some things. So I have a quick objectives. I'm going to share a little bit about my story here at the university, because I think it actually is helpful in seeing how the Neighborhoods Initiative evolved to be in the place that it is now, and hopefully the starting point of where we want to go over the next however long we're here. Tell a little bit about why we bother doing some of the things we do and what they mean and how they connect to the mission of the university and the mission of the Great Cities Institute. Describe our approach to community engagement and share a little bit about some of the lessons I've learned along the way, both about community engagement and leading institutional change, which is what I think a large part of our work is. I'm going to talk a little bit about the Neighborhoods Initiative and the time we have, and I'm also going to talk somewhat about Healthy Cities, which is the other hat I wear that over the last 2 years I've connected for myself, just to be sane. So I think I'll start with the beginning. I have an opportunity to present this actually in Portland when I went earlier this year and had an opportunity to be in a presentation with Vim Vivo, who was the founder of the Great Cities Institute, and he's there doing his big thing in that city. And I had an opportunity to talk with one of the colleges there about the Neighborhoods Initiatives, because their goal was to try to replicate something like this in another city. And in my career here at GCI, I've had an opportunity to do this at other universities several times, because it is, I think, a unique investment of the university and an innovative way to approach our responsibilities as a neighbor here in the city of Chicago. I started as a pediatric nurse. I actually graduated from Northwestern when they had a nursing program there. Left there thinking I didn't know what I really wanted to do, but I did know that I wanted to come to the university. We weren't UIC then. We were the University of Illinois, and continue my education. So I graduated in July. I started here in July, and I was in school by August. deciding I wanted to go forward. I had a long, about a five-year career, first in the hospital setting in pediatric nursing, and then left to go to the University of Chicago for 2 years after I finished my first degree. And I decided while I was at the University of Chicago that I really did like the mission of the University of Illinois. And I liked its commitment, even though I think it was kicking and screaming in that commitment then, because we've had a long history of, as an institution, of trying to find our identity in the city. But I decided I liked that struggle versus the very different struggle at the University of Chicago. And so after 2 years, I returned to the university, where I, for about 11 years, was the director in the hospital of parent and child services, the parent-child division. Actually, that's where my epiphany occurred and my interest in working outside of an institution in the community. And I can tell you the very day that it happened. I can even remember what I had on that day. I had the unfortunate opportunity to participate in the resuscitation of a baby that had drowned in a mop bucket from the Rockwell Public Housing community. And it was in that moment that I realized that I was on the wrong side of the problem. And I didn't want to be saving people from near death anymore. I wanted to be in a circumstance where we could possibly prevent things from happening. In the course, I didn't leave immediately, but I did start writing grants then. I've had a long history of raising money to do things that nobody had money to invest in. But I wrote my first grant and got a grant from the March of Dimes to do something outside in the homes of women to better prepare them to care for their children. I was really interested in infant mortality at that time. But I learned very quickly that it wasn't the medical aspects or the health-related aspects of infant mortality that were most intriguing for me. It was the life circumstances of the people who were experiencing early death. And that took us beyond looking at the things that I was comfortable with into the realm of learning more about what the effect of bad housing was, or poor neighborhoods, or lack of employment, or lack of literacy, how those impacted the quality of life that people were experiencing. And that started, I think, the journey on of looking for different positions that would allow me to work in those venues, other determinants of health, other determinants of the quality of life. As Nacho mentioned, my first position after that 11-year stint was as director of Miles Square Health Center. I went out to the health center world because I thought this would be a better place from which to do the kind of work I wanted to do in a community-based setting. I was actually working with this institution 2 years before making that move, when they were trying to reopen Miles Square Health Center. It had lost its federal funding and closed, and I was part of a three-person team that went out from the university to look at how we might help them be able to reopen the health center. Subsequently, the city of Chicago received the health center for $1. With the agreement that from the federal government, with the agreement that they would partner with the university to reopen the health center. And I first became a part of this as a member of a steering team with three people from the city and three people from the university to reopen the health center. Now, there were two lessons in there that continue in the work that I do now. It was my first opportunity to work on a university-community partnership, because many community organizations had gotten together to reopen Miles Square. And in particular, the Interfaith Organizing Project on the West Side had organized to get this center reopened. So it was my first taste of working directly with community groups in a contentious relationship to accomplish something big. It was also my first working relationship with the city of Chicago and my first opportunity to have a dual reporting relationship. Because during the time that I was first as chair of the steering committee and then subsequently as director of the Miles Square, I reported to both the university and the commissioner of health. So it was my first opportunity to work in this kind of strange reporting relationships with people who had different expectations about what you do. But it was an important learning experience. I certainly learned patience and the ability to be able to meet different expectations, hopefully as long as they were going in the same direction. So that's was part of it. It was also my first opportunity to step out of the university and look back at it. And actually, because of, even though Miles Square began and continues as a university entity in the community, it is governed by a community board, of which there are 51% of that board are users of the health center. So you have to be responsive to the community in this kind of a health center setting. And so it was a learning experience, and I also had to hear firsthand complaints about the university or concerns about the university or things they wish the university would do differently and all of the rumors associated with it. This was also at the time of the demolition of the old stadium and the building of the United Center. So I had an opportunity through partnerships there to work with communities as they were trying to save their neighborhoods or to make sure that they were not all parking lots or to have some involvement in what the community would get as a result of the stadium being built there. And I think those were my early lessons in what it took to be a neighbor, because I was the director of a community-based organization. Even though I was an employee of the university, I had to have an interest in the community that surrounded us. In addition to that, it was taking away some of our property to build some of the nice places where people are parking now, where it's historically a part of Miles Square. And so I had an opportunity to work with my community neighbors in trying to salvage something or create a new community surrounding this stadium opportunity. So that was important. After I had my second child, while I was at Miles Square, I decided I was working really, really hard, and I needed something where my life would be a little bit more predictable and less stressful. And so that's when I went into the vice chancellor's office as the director of community health, bringing some programs with me and taking on responsibility for developing new initiatives for, at that time, for the west side of our campus. But an important thing happened then. I met Vim for the first time. He came out right as I was leaving Miles Square to talk about what the GCI was supposed to do and what it wanted to do and making connections to community-based organizations, because that's how we were approached at the time. And when I moved into that role, I became the liaison from the west side to great cities. And for a couple of years, for 3 years, I served in that capacity as looking from the west side to the east side in the great cities role. When that office was dissolved, as the university has a tendency to do, we restructure. I've been here through so many restructurings. I'm just always peaceful through the current ones. I had an opportunity to decide then what I should do next. And I thought that was a good thing that I wasn't leaving, but made a decision at that time, since I was so enamored. I was there when they launched GCI. It seemed to be really consistent with what I learned, and it was certainly consistent with the reasons I came back to the university to come to the Great Cities Institute. But in a different way, because at that time, I think the institute director was really focused on eliminating the imbalance between the role of GCI on the east and the west side. And since I had that kind of liaison role, it looked like this might be a way to do it, because I knew the people that were on the west side, although I didn't know as many people on the east side, with the exception of the College of Education and Social Work. But I came here with the belief that this was going to be a whole campus undertaking for the Neighborhoods Initiative, although this was the first time it was really going to be manifested in the structure of the staff that were going to be involved. So I pulled three slides from one of my very, very early presentations about the Neighborhoods Initiative. During those first years, I spent time going from college to college talking about the Neighborhoods Initiative and what we were trying to do in making this whole campus integration. And I pulled from one of them's earlier presentation three slides that would help me make the connection between GCI and NI. And one of them was this first one that they talked about, the 2 years prior to its launching, that there's a redirection to have teaching research and partnership resources to focus on the city of Chicago. And that seemed to be in keeping with what I hoped we'd be able to accomplish in the new role that I was taking responsibility for. The second was this one, and because in it there were different words that then later blended over into our mission statement for the Neighborhoods Initiative and the core concepts that drive our work. institutional engagement, dissemination and application, interdisciplinary knowledge, and responsiveness were the things that caught my attention. And if you ever talk to me for a long time, I guarantee you, you won't get through a conversation about our work without hearing one of those words in some variation. It was an important part of what we were supposed to be responsible for. The final one was this one. It was when I came to GCI that I learned about what a land-grant university was, because I'd been here all that time. I'd never heard of that. But in this discussion, in the launch of GCI, they talked about how to take the land-grant tradition and put it in a metropolitan context, and what did that actually mean? And I've been spending the rest of my career here at the university trying to figure that out and trying to talk about it in a way that would help other people get on to that particular bandwagon. And for me, it meant that this institution had a responsibility to contribute something to the city, and as it's generating knowledge, either through people that they bring in and engage in the knowledge-generating process, or the people generate knowledge and we take it out and apply it in the city, that would be an important part of our work. And the final part of this vision for the Engage University, which was the original launch paragraph for GCI, it talked about integrating teaching through interdisciplinary approaches and partnerships with the city. And that's been the foundation of the work for the Neighborhoods Initiative during the time that I've been here. Now, I began this role in a period of great drama at the university. We always have drama. We have different drama each year. But this is the drama of the historical animosity between the two sides of the campus and the campus and our communities, among others that we had on that list. There was still the ongoing expansion fallout because of the expansion of the South Campus development, which was going on somewhat predating that, but certainly continuing during the earliest years of the Neighborhoods Initiative. We were still, although charged with the responsibility of having people play well together in the same sandbox, we were very much a silo-based institution of colleges working independently and talking about interdisciplinary work, but not quite getting how we were supposed to be doing it. It was also at a time when there was a lot of turmoil between the university and the Black Caucus and the Latino Caucus. And if you've been here a while, you might recall that there were numerous meetings here. This was done during Dr. Brodsky's administration because of those tensions to talk about the university's role in the city as an institution that's supported through the state legislature. And as a result of that, not only was that going on, those tensions, but there was a lot of local politics, particularly because of the repositioning of the aldermen in the area and the need to make sure that people were supportive of the work the university was doing. The interesting about that for me, and hence one of the other lessons, is I learned a great deal during that time about relationships with the local and state and federal leadership because of conversations that would have to occur. I would go to those hearings, or I'd have individual conversations with the aldermen that represented our areas because I wanted their support. Often the things that we were raising money for required support of the local leadership. And so the relationship aspect of what we were doing in launching this initiative were very important. So it was a period of great learning for me. Bottom line, when we got to the point of saying what the Neighborhoods Initiative was supposed to do, and this began as one of my first slides to explain what the Neighborhoods Initiative was at the time that we were going from college to college trying to establish ourselves. And so my response was is that we're putting the land-grant tradition in context in the city of Chicago, that we're working on a whole campus integration, and my way of going about doing that was to try to connect with interested colleges on both sides of campus. And after trying to do it just from here, I decided that wouldn't work well. Hence, we have the structure that we have now of having one office on the east side and one office on the west side of campus. And working very hard to say that this is not this college's program or this college's program, is that these colleges are hosting the Neighborhoods Initiative that are a part of great cities on either side of campus. And that then eliminated the challenge that people had of coming to things that we would do because, oh, it's on the east side or, oh, it's on the west side, that we would focus on interdisciplinary work and community partnerships, pay equal attention to developing the relationships in both arenas, that we would look at different kinds of scholars, and this may be our community scholars, people who don't necessarily bring the traditional kind of intellect to the partnership, but bring life wisdom, or they were our former students, and therefore they contribute from a scholarly perspective as well. That when knowledge was generated, we would make sure that we'd include on that list responsive knowledge, meaning that we would stay aware of what the needs of the communities were and then try to respond to that. And we've done that by connecting with students, often through the School of Public Health, to do periodic asset and needs assessments of our communities. They need projects. We need to stay current on what's happening in the community, and so we've engaged them to go out and do full-scale community assessments by neighborhood to keep us up to date. And also to make sure that the work of the investigators here, the researchers here, were of value to the communities that they engaged to do the work. And so not only, and I say this later when I talk about healthy cities, that it's moving new information beyond translation, but also helping, meaning that we'll tell you what this means in more simplistic terms, what we discovered in our research, but it's moving you into telling you what you can do with it as well. Now that this we've discovered this, this is how you can use that. So that was taking, I think, a rather bold and different step for a lot of the researchers that we work with, but I'll come back to that in a moment. If you go to our website, you'll see a long list of what is described as the core concepts of the Neighborhoods Initiative. About every 2 years, we look at them again, we look at the mission again, we tighten it up every year, because I've always felt that if you have a mission or you have beliefs and you only pull them out when you have a site visit by some funder, then they really don't drive what you're doing. And so it's important for us to look at them periodically and change them or say, this is still what we're about. And I very much believe that. We review these periodically to make sure that they still say what we say we're supposed to be doing. So in a nutshell, we fulfill the mission of the Great Cities Commitment. I say, breathe life into the mission of the university. We say, although depending upon who you're talking to, everybody picks a different part. We have a tripart mission of service, research, and education. And we lean heavily towards the research aspect, and we lean the other way towards the education. And I always like to say that neither one of those could happen if the city that you're in doesn't see you as valuable. So the service is equally important, and it sustains the relationships that drive students here, that make communities welcoming to researchers who want to be in the community. So it should be lifted up somewhat, and so that's part of our responsibility. That we're focused on mutually beneficial work that's done in partnerships. And later, when I talk about healthy cities, I'll say that one of the things that I think was one of the greatest accomplishments we did through healthy cities was get a group of people across many colleges to agree on what our partnership principles were. So it wasn't just a word saying that you went out and talked to somebody and said, okay, we're not partners. But there were principles that both parties agreed to adhere to so that they would truly be mutually beneficial relationships. Our core concepts remind people that we're not simply located in an urban community as an institution. We're a neighbor, and that brings with it responsibilities as a neighbor and the same sentiments about the space that we're occupying together. And my favorite one, so I put it in red, is that the Neighborhoods Initiative is responsible for aligning the university's actions to reflect this commitment that we presumably had. Now, we're a small entity within a big university, so that's that's kind of like a really big idea. How can you do this for a whole university? And I'll just usually say, well, one partner at a time or one agency at a time, continuing to build on establishing a good relationship so that at least when somebody hears it, they think, well, that may be someplace we can go because we're mad at this other group. Or they may be able to get the answers for us because historically they've been consistent in being a good partner in relationships. I use this one always, too. I share the story of my son asking me what I did. Now, given what I've been saying so far, that's kind of a tough question. When he was younger, he wanted to say at school what his mom did. And I was helping him tie his shoe at the time, trying to figure out, well, how I'm going to answer that. What do I say when somebody asks me what my job is so they'll know if they want to invite me for parent talking about your job thing? And I told him, because at the time we were tying his shoes, that the Neighborhoods Initiative is the knot in the bow. We are the entity that attempts to hold together the relationship between the university and the community. And the reason I like that particular analogy is because sometimes your shoelaces become untied and you have to tend to them in order to keep them secure. And so part of our work is making sure in our little space that we have that we're maintaining good relationships, that we're working on improving bad relationships, that we're helping to resolve conflicts that may occur with the that we are aware of and the people with the people in the university. The community. We're the relationship managers. Our structure at the present time is there's a director, and I finally accepted the responsibility of being the bridge between the two sides of our campus. My thought that eventually this would be so deeply embedded in the university that we naturally were seen as part of the whole university kind of they're up there, but kind of dwindling away. But I do serve that same role on both sides of campus. We have anchors on each side of campus in associate director roles. So there is an associate director on each side of campus that's responsible for the day-to-day management of the program aspects of the Neighborhoods Initiative. And so on the west side, our associate director is the associate director for community engagement. She's responsible for maintaining our health-related programs that I'll talk about in a moment. And on the east side, our director is for community capacity and economic development and has responsibility of the non-usual health-related aspects of the Neighborhoods Initiative. We also have a fairly large community nutrition and wellness program that I'll talk about briefly for a minute. We have an associate director for medical affairs because of our clinical enterprise. And then we have a couple of program directors for our larger programs that work with the faith community or coordinate our service partnerships. We have about 70 people that are a part of the Neighborhoods Initiative, and they're actually the people that make sure that our work really happens. And I also think they reflect our commitment in capacity building because a large part of that workforce are lay workers who come in and are trained to be either ambassadors for certain programs or provide services in a manner that I think is more responsive and appealing than when the health professionals or professors go out and provide the services. We have a long history of working with community workers. In fact, we were responsible for developing that civil service job here at the university. And so in every program that we have, we try to engage community people in employment opportunities with the goal that hopefully they'll move up through the system. Recently, I had an opportunity to put together a presentation, and I just decided I'd use those to enliven this one. We are the bridge between the East and the West. Our anchor colleges are now the School of Public Health. We have an office located in the Institute of Health Research and Policy. We moved there a year ago last month, because of the size of our division, and we needed space, and they had space and support services for the kind of work we did. And then our primary office is here in the College of Urban Planning and Great Cities Institute, as you know. We work with many colleges, and there are actually more than these, but we have either through partnerships or interdisciplinary grants or work with students. We work with colleges on both sides of campus, and the work differs depending upon what brought us together in the first place. How are we supported? Neighborhoods Initiative is supported by state funds. Although, like most entities here in the university, those have been dwindling over the years because of the poor economy of the state and our university's response to it. We have state contracts that support several of our programs. City contracts for professional services, which is our way of having resources to do some of the unique things that we do. We actually will solicit professional services if we hear someone's got a large grant and we think that it has a community research component of it. We might approach them to do some aspect of the work. And so we have several city contracts. We have foundation support through competitive grants or delegate agency agreements. We have foundation support through solicited contributions, which is kind of introducing you contributions where a foundation might give a small award for you to demonstrate how wonderful you are, hopefully, and then you'll come in with a grant for more support. Federal grants, clinical revenue from our federally qualified health centers, and that actually supports the infrastructure on the west side and the directors that are there. Interdisciplinary partnerships where others are submitting grants and we go in on part of it to have a part of the grant to help support other work, and revenue generated from community education programs or consultation is how the Neighborhoods Initiative programs are supported. So what do we do? Well, based on some of the things that I've talked about, our goal is to make sure that we facilitate respectful partnerships both from within our core team and with other partners within the university that want to make connections to the community and choose to do that through the Neighborhoods Initiative. We provide both student and community indoctrination, if you will. And the way that usually operates is I may go, or some other member of the team may go into a student, a classroom or someone's program to teach people about respectful entry in community and appropriate etiquette in a community university partnership, as well as helping to resolve some of the challenges that people experience when they are in a different place for them. We directly connect people to community partners. I tell people that I'm often a translator for people who don't remember that they do speak English when they go out and they are presenting in community settings, and helping them translate to something that's more appropriate to the settings that they're in. I spend a lot of time taking people to meetings who want to be introduced or to be make connections for either clinical trials or recruiting people to be involved in projects. All of our team does that. And some of the other programs that I think you might be familiar with, the doing parts of what our work, we work with a diverse city partners from schools to park districts, faith community, different community-based organizations and programs throughout Chicago. Our nutrition program takes us citywide, and while the focus is on delivering nutrition education, fitness, work, the value of this large program is not only what it does for the city in that way, but it introduces us to many, many more potential partners to be involved in initiatives that are here at the university. For example, in January, we're doing a Would You Like to Make a Connection to a Community kind of seminar that if you're interested in working with school-age children, we're in 79 schools. If you're interested in working with the faith community, we're working with 90-something churches to help people recognize what resources are available to them if they will adopt our partnership principles and be willing to work in a way that we feel is respectful in the communities that we're in. So we have about 326 active sites through this particular initiative and the others that are more community-based. And these are not things that we have as a name on a list of places that we count as partners. These are places where we're actually doing some kind of work. In Nacho's presentation, he talked about Chi West and Illinois Resource Nest that takes things statewide. This is important for us because two of our projects are statewide, working through Extension or through other community-based organizations. And that's helpful for us in some of our fundraising efforts because we have often funders who don't want to just do a Chicago thing. So it's useful for us to be able to say that we have broader impact than just the city of Chicago. We also provide direct services through five schools. We have school, what I call school-located community health centers, and others might call them school-based health centers. So these are clinics located in schools and staffed by staff of UICNI. We call them school-located health centers because we serve not only students, but the community surrounding the school. So they are all what's called federally qualified health center. We've been very successful in getting that designation from the Bureau of Primary Health Care, which allows us to get a higher rate of reimbursement for our services, which is how we are able to support somewhat our infrastructure and sustain those programs in schools. In the schools that where we're involved, we provide a full scope of services, primary care, acute illness managed, mental health, referral back into the university. So it is a way to generate volume within our medical center. But we also are a partner for the College of Education or other programs that work with youth or families. It is, as I mentioned, a place where I like working in schools and churches. And the reason for that is that those are anchor institutions in communities. They are less likely to be eliminated because of some pool of funding, although that's not happening recently. But they are generally places where you can reach families. And my preference is, although we have two high schools, my preference is always to work with elementary schools. And the reason for that is that sometimes you can't reach adults in any other way than through a school or a church. So if you're interested in reaching community, parents will stay connected with their younger children. They start to drift away in high school. So if you want to disseminate information and you want to get it out to people, the best place, in my opinion, is to work through an elementary school or a faith institution. So we often try to make sure that we develop the relationships in that way. Our approach to developing these relationships, I think, are interesting also. We are about to develop a new program in the Brighton Park community. We spent the last 2 years learning Brighton Park because it was an unfamiliar work area for us. And so we've been involved with them in different ways over the last 2 years while we learn more about the community. And for example, at the present time, we're doing, and often with students, block by block windshield assessment of the community so we actually understand the community beyond the internet version of what the community is about. And that's generally the process for developing relationships. We certainly learn a lot when we look things up in public reports or review the census information or interview people. But we learn the most by being on the ground and moving around and trying to understand what the community and its structure is like. This is also our pipeline program for exposing youth that are potential students for the university. We have a number of different kinds of clubs or opportunities for students to learn more about the university. It is also a place where researchers who have an interest in, as I mentioned, in family, youth, education can develop relationships in those schools. So what value does this aspect of our work add? Beyond the relationship management that I talked about, we certainly provide responsive research opportunities, and by that periodically, you might have heard of a community forum or something where we're bringing community members together to tell us what are the issues in the community at this time. We hosted a big one in 2007 that brought people together to develop the beginning of a research agenda that will be continuing next year. But periodically, we also do focus groups in different communities to get a sense of their needs beyond, you know, often people will introduce me as the person who's bringing the health aspect to the table, but in our definition of health, it is the health of community. So the issues that often come up are not individual health-related issues. They may be related to transportation or graffiti or gang violence and different issues such as that. So we are certainly a vehicle for resolving conflict or misinformation between community and the university, real-world experience for students who want to be out and doing work where they can see the impact of their work beyond what they publish and put in the library, preparing researchers for community-based research, translation and application arm for the university. Now, I said if I had time, and I will have time, and I do want to leave time for questions, that I would talk a little bit about the Healthy Cities Collaborative, which is the other aspect of our work, which in this last 2 years we've folded into a closer partnership with the Neighborhoods Initiative, whereas initially we were two separate entities. So let me tell you a little bit about how they started. In 2006, the then director, Dr. Perry, of GCI, introduced the idea of having three research clusters here at the university, one for economic development, one for governance, and the Healthy City Research Cluster, and selected or asked three people to take responsibility for those clusters. the Healthy City Cluster was perfect timing for me because it was something that I had been talking to Dr. Perry about for several years, the importance of us taking on the cause of the city and looking at health much more broadly. So it was a great timing for me. It was also the time that I began a Robert Wood Johnson Fellowship, which was going to last for 3 years, and it gave me some time and some resources to help develop the idea here at the university. I was caught by this by looking at the Healthy Cities movement that was began in Canada and then was spreading through the European countries of a city or a community, because it's sometimes called the Healthy Communities Movement, focused on improving the health of their place, and from cultural, physical, economic, and all of the factors that were related to them. There were several common elements to all of those models, that it was a participatory one, that the ideas came from coalitions and diverse groups working together, that the funding was a result of local commitment from government, foundations, and other businesses within the communities, that the foundation was set on a local, priorities were local, all things that have blended into the work that we've been doing through Healthy Cities and the Neighborhoods Initiative. So in this room, we launched Healthy Cities with an invitation to people from both sides of campus to come over and learn GCI is reorganizing itself. And we had a wonderful turnout of people to come to see what that was about. I think people initially came because they wanted to make sure it didn't take over something that they were doing. But nevertheless, we were happy to have them here anyway. And we made connections. The vision was to have Healthy City make connections to not only the university campus, but other entities within the university that had some connection to community and some connection to larger entities like city departments that had the same kinds of connections. So that's how that started. Now, I'm abbreviating the history somewhat because of time, but we ended with looking at, well, at least internally, let's make the connections to through partnerships that HCC would support, through the new Community Engagement Research Corps that began on the West Side as a result of the Clinical Translational Science Award that the university got, through our service partnerships, and certainly through our other engagement activities. I'm going in the wrong direction. And so in the design of it, and this is actually from some of the earlier implementation work, the goal was to have internal partnerships with colleges, centers, and institutes. I had a student that first year that went through the exercise of identifying all of the centers and institutes here at the university. You would be amazed. There were over, it was a surprise to me. I was expecting it to be a short list. There was over like 100 and some of them, and many of them were inactive, although they were still, you could still look them up and see this center. So our goal was to at least identify those centers that were active and who were in somewhat way involved with community engagement or community research activities, and extend an invitation to them to be a part of this common, this group that had an interest in community engagement. That we would focus on university and community partnerships for research at this time, and that we would develop partnerships with public serving institutions or organizations and faith institutions as a part of our work. The first phase in the first year of this was focused on institutionalizing the plan or branding Healthy Cities. One thing I've learned here at the university is that you create something and you put it in the phone book and it becomes. And so that's actually how I began Community Health on the other side, and that's how we moved to Healthy Cities on this side. We knew that given what we were trying to do, this would require a culture change in the university to really encourage a culture of community engagement in equitable partnerships. That would be a change for some areas. That it had to be with the full support of the leadership, and so that first year, including meeting with the external affairs with the chancellor's office to talk about what we were trying to do with the collaborative and what equity would mean in the relationships that we hopefully want to develop. Living through some amnesia about the things that we used to do, and we tried that before and that kind of thing. Very upfront in the communications about how people would have to change in order to be able to support what we were going to do. And I think a lot of patience is still required for this. We needed to change the name early, and we changed the name from cluster to collaborative because we wanted to emphasize that we were not just ivory towers sitting next to each other in a room playing at interdisciplinary collaboration. And that I've always liked, I usually highlight labor and collaborate to remind people that it would require us to do some work in order to get to the place where we actually were thinking alike and watching out for each other's benefit in the work that we were doing. In addition to that, we identified about 50 centers that we would directly try to engage in what we were doing, with the goal to move beyond happenstance kind of relationships and working independently in communities and having some kind of consistent approach to communities so they wouldn't say, well, the last people who came offered us this, or they said the university was about this. We were working very hard to see that we would have a common message, at least among the people who agreed to collaborate with Healthy Cities. And then the branding activities, we ultimately came up with a description of who we are, and we try to put that out in everything that we do and through activities. I'm going to just briefly go over this. As I mentioned, we had a large summit at the time that we began this to bring together community organizations at the Garfield Park Conservatory for a day of talking about relationships with the university. It was a meeting facilitated by people other than university people. We had two facilitators come in to coordinate the conversation. No university people were there. It gave them an opportunity to talk about the university. We had recorders there, students working with us, who recorded the conversation for us. And then we produced a report that we got approved by the community, and then I brought it back to begin presenting it to the university. And that laid out the work plan for Healthy Cities for the next few years, and for the Neighborhoods Initiative in some of the things that came up. And that's available on our website. So let me end this by saying, what does Healthy Cities do now, and how does it connect to the Neighborhoods Initiative? This is still in an implementation phase, and I shared at the time that I felt it would take us 5 years to get Healthy Cities branded and up and operating. We're in year four. We now host bi-monthly meetings to bring together people who want to talk about the issues that are important to the work that we're doing. We hosted the website, which is intended to be informational and educational, and a place where we could put information about work that's research that's been completed or educational materials for the community that are interested in understanding what research is about. And that's something that we're continuing to develop and maintain. We completed the partnership principles and assessment tools for people who want to see if their partnerships are in line with the principles. We host quarterly educational sessions. We host bi-monthly conversations, faculty dialogues, where people come together to talk about no agenda other than a topic, a prompter for people to come together to share either their successes or their failures, make connections, or get advice about how to do the things that they need to do. We began what we call sharing what we've learned opportunities. And we use this. Periodically, I'll send out a letter to researchers and say, okay, have you finished your research and are you ready to share it with the community? If they are ready to share it, then we will help them put it in a format that is useful for that audience. And generally encourage people, although you'd be amazed at how hard this is, to get it into one page. And I'll tell people it's something that you want them to fold and put in their church bulletin if they want to, so that they can learn about something. In January, we're launching a new aspect of the website where we will begin to broadcast through our newsletter to community. Here's the latest information about this research and the featured researcher. It's under construction now. And they will be able to pull off the one-pager if they want to go to a meeting and say, this is everything the University of Illinois learned about this. And they will also be able to learn more about the researcher and make connections with the researcher through our website or through the link that's provided in this communication. I think that's in a nutshell, that's pretty much where we're going. The two big initiatives that we have that have taken us citywide in the efforts that we have are the Chicago CDPR Network, which is a group that meets bi-monthly. We move around the city so that nobody can say, oh, that's a U of I thing, that brings together researchers from every, now I would say pretty much every academic institution in Chicago. We host a website for the Chicago CBPR Network where people can talk about community research or post information about jobs or ask questions about research tools or methods. And then we meet every other month. Our most recent meeting was at Chicago State, and it was about community research in non-traditional settings. We, because of support, a grant from the Sprague Foundation, have been able to host these meetings. This grant from the Sprague Foundation is interesting in that we've set it up so that it moves from institution to institution as well. And the last one is the Chicagoland CTSA Network. This is a partnership between Northwestern, University of Chicago, and UIC that brings together these three institutions. Our goal is to try to get some kind of a common face for community research across three institutions. And if we learn something at this institution and we want to share it with our community partners, we now have a way to give it to the University of Chicago so they could share it with their community partners as well. And that as a result of that, it extends the benefit across the city. All of those meetings are open to people who are interested in participating in them, and you just need to let me know, and I'll be happy to get you on the list. I said that was the last of this, but there are just a couple of things that I want to share as partnerships from Healthy Cities. We were successful in bringing together three grantees to apply for a Center for Excellence in Eliminating Disparities award from the Center of Disease Control. And as a result of that, this group is focusing on two things, literacy, health literacy, and making food available in the food deserts of Chicago. So we've been focusing on urban gardening, for example, and looking at areas and changing some policies in the city to assess food establishments in a way that lets us know if it is truly establishments that offers things like meats, fresh fruits, and vegetables. Those are a couple of the things that the center has been working on. The Center for Faith and Community Health Transformation was launched in 2009. It brings together the faith community. This is a group of over 90 institutions that I said that we were involved in, of all denominations. It's a partnership between UIC Healthy Cities, Advocate Health Systems, and the Chicago Department of Public Health. The goal being to focus on transforming communities through knowledge that was generated through universities or the ability to provide services such as the Department of Health or Advocate, evidence-based service in communities. At this time, I think this group is still developing, gluing itself together in order to be able to do work in the city. How is Healthy Cities supported? Foundation support. Our partnerships, our interdisciplinary partnerships that allow people to contribute small amounts to the big work that we're doing, small amount of revenue, sheer determination, and a lot of prayer is how we work together. Let me end with saying what's been challenging about doing this. Developing both the Foundation for the Neighborhoods Initiative and Healthy Cities is extremely time-consuming. In a good way, you stay very busy when you're trying to take on an initiative like that for a university as big as ours, but it's very interesting work. I think now there's some competition with everyone trying to do things similar to this in Chicago. I think that's because that's where the money is driving things. Most competitive grants now require you to have some involvement, of grassroots involvement with people that the programs are going to serve or who are going to be involved in it. Money and resources is always a challenge. I spend most of my time trying to find some or write for some. There's different expectations for all of the players in this. As I said, we work with many colleges and different programs, all of which have slightly different expectations about what they should get or what you should do in those relationships. I think from the perspective of working with faculty, the things that we promote that people should do in developing relationships do require time. It requires an interest in developing relationships rather than just going in with the hit-and-miss approach that universities are always accused of taking. And that can be challenging for people. And I think that's essentially it. In most of the things that we do, if we're going to have long-term working relationships with people who not traditionally work together, I try to build in something that will focus on the relationship part of it. often when in building interdisciplinary partnerships or even partnerships between the university and the community, we come together when we have to have the partnership. There's a grant opportunity, for example. And so partnerships are often forced because we don't have opportunities to do things when it's not the work of what we do. So the socialization of people, even the faculty dialogues that bring people together, are intended to get people in the mindset of forming a partnership. While you're waiting for something to start and you're sitting next to somebody and you mention that you do similar work, that they make connections in that way. And literally, we also do provide opportunities for play in some of the activities that we do, like in the forums that I talked about. We often begin the forums with something silly, but something playful that people might do. The intent is to get people doing something that comes more naturally to them, to do that together, so that it's all a part of the relationship development part of it. I really believe that it's important to develop partnerships before you have to. And so for that reason, if you know you have an interest in a particular area of research, and you know it's perhaps with the African-American community, I encourage people not to run out and try to find one when the grant opportunity begins, but begin time in the community, within the social life of the community or attending community meetings, so that it seems more natural to have a partnership when an opportunity presents. And often we don't do it that way. People get the opportunity, then they run out and get the partner. And this is encouraging people to reverse it and do it in the other direction, so that you know. Because you really, in order for partnerships to work, you really have to know your partner. And it's hard to do that when you have a deadline in a month.
Can I follow up on that? I first just want to say how amazing this is to me, and really appreciate not only your presentation but all that you represent in for this university and your work. See, it's really very inspiring. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the kind of tension, the faculty tension around this, that I think gets mirrored then in kind of the university administration, and kind of in particular the pressure or move toward academic excellence and Research One status and all of those kinds of things that often is seen as oppositional to engaged scholarship and accountability and true collaborative relationships with our neighbors. I really like that notion. And how do you help, or how can we better help, especially junior faculty, figure out where they're going to land on that and be rewarded for the kind of work that that your work so brilliantly represents, without them feeling like they can't sort of look up from their desk until they're tenured or promoted or something like that?
You know, that's such a complicated question. I think if I could answer that, I'd probably get a Nobel Award or something.
You would. Yeah, we'll give you one here.
Because that is one of probably the most persistent problems that I've experienced in making connections with faculty. Mm-hmm. What I've been working on, at least over the last year or so, is trying to describe the dilemma. That was the reason for the faculty survey that we just finished. In the spring, we launched this faculty survey to find out what barriers people were experiencing to community engagement or research. Mm-hmm. And the most impressive thing about it is that, one, the response, and second, that people went beyond checking a box and provided a narrative response. In some cases, I couldn't even publish what they said.
Right.
And in one case, if you look at that survey, which is on the website, I left it exactly the way they said it, because I felt I needed to leave it that way so that people could understand how strongly this person felt about how challenging it was for them. The purpose of doing that was, one, for me to get a feel for what kind of things we might be able to do through Healthy Cities, but more importantly, I wanted to summarize provide some information to senior leadership about what the climate was like for this kind of very, very important work. The second phase of it, there were so many people who mentioned challenges related to systems, such as the IRB in it, and how that made it difficult, that we did a second part of the survey. Now, to get a better sense of what challenges those were. And people, we had both a focus group and we had the survey completed. We finished that, and I had an opportunity to present it to the new research committee of the university. And on the 18th of December, I will actually go in to meet with the director of the IRB and some other people. And the reason that I felt compelled to keep pushing it forward, because I could just did it and send it to people, mm-hmm. is because people spend so much time writing that I wanted to make sure something happened with what they contributed. And so we just decided we're going to stay on it. We're going to keep advancing it. There are some things in there I think that can readily be fixed. Mm-hmm. There are other things that will require big change. But you won't get to them unless somebody starts it. And so we decided we'd be the thorn right now mm-hmm. to keep moving this forward. With regards to the time and issues, I've had people come to the forums who said, oh, I wish I had known about this last year, or we don't have anything like this in our college. And the sad thing about that is our communication systems here are so poor that there's often help for people, but they just don't know how to make connections to it. And I'm still trying to figure out how to do that. I do know that through the survey process, I did learn that it's important to not only do things through the lists that we have, because mm-hmm. people often say, we get so much mail that people just go through delete, delete, delete. Actually, part of the reason we got a good response is I sat with the phone book and I just went through the phone book. And if I saw somebody who had research or community, anything in their name, I sent it to them. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't have to be that mm-hmm. difficult. But it's also given me an idea of how valuable it would be to be able to distinguish who might have this interest in the university and try to start bringing them together and to hopefully get this to a bigger profile. In January, when we launched that section of that research page, I'm still working on the institutional investment in what we're doing. So there's a hidden agenda behind all aspects of the work, because I think it takes a decade to change the culture of anything that you're doing. Since many people have external funding to do the work that they do, and all of the funders say, well, what are you going to do? They want to know what's going to happen with their investment, or how are you going to disseminate this work, or how are you going to get publicity for it? I'm hoping that one of the ways that we'll be able to continue to support both us, because these are mutually beneficial, and the researcher, is to create a place where we do that dissemination work with them, really. Not just having people present at a professional meeting or writing an article or sending their community partner, this is the results of our study, or come here to the university to hear what we did. We're trying to get past all of that, but producing something that we can put in people's hands with instructions about how you can use this to change your little piece of the world, I think that's going to have big impact. I think definitely for the researcher and ultimately for the university. And I'm hoping that'll be a big enough hook for people to see that this is in fact valuable. So, and their researcher accomplished this, and maybe that they would get the kind of recognition and support at the department level that would allow them to be able to do this and get tenure if that's important for them. But as I said, if I could answer that one, I'd be a hot commodity here, because it comes up everywhere I go.
I'm sure. Well, thank you. Yes. Yeah, I wanted to say, I think that you're so eloquent and so respectfully and convincing, you could probably make something up and people would start buying it in terms of an answer. But I wanted to thank you, see, especially for the way you start out telling your story. That just brought so much meaning to it and gives me even more respect for you.
Thank you.
Even though I had no idea how much you were doing. And so I'm grateful for these kinds of forums where we really get to learn in more depth the people that we pass in the hall or in the time or in our campus together. I also wanted to acknowledge your vision and your willingness to look at the long haul and to be patient. Mm-hmm. And I know I'm going to take that away with me as a reminder. So I really want to salute you for what you're doing. It really is inspiring.
Thank you, Kate.
And I'll be calling you before we find a grant so we can get our partnership from talking to doing, because I see a lot of connections and we're already talking about that.
Well, thank you.
This is a question that I may have difficulty formulating because it's a lot of things been going through my mind connected to the strategic thinking of the Institute. There's one model that I think describes the origins of the Great Cities Institute, which is to brand the university as an urban university with the idea that it has a special obligation to its community and that in some sense everyone in the university is related to that mission. But as you said at the outset, UIC has identified itself as a Research One institution. The new code word is a global.
World class.
And so I'm beginning to think that a rethinking of the model is in order, but one that really dovetails with what you're doing, doesn't conflict with it. And that is a recognition that as an urban institution, we have special strengths in urban programs, that we have a large number of faculty members and other people on campus who have a special interest in relationship to its community, the local urban community. But at the same time, it doesn't encompass everybody. Because the reason I'm coming to this view is I've been, of course, in political science in my career, and I can tell you that in my field, applied research is the kiss of death for tenure and promotion, and I don't believe it's going to change, and I don't think heaven and earth is going to change it very soon, soon enough. So I'm beginning to think that there's a new model that trying to preach to people who that they're urban when they're really not just irritates them. And that what we can do is really focus, more focus the strengths that we do have. How do you respond to this? And this matters to me because I'm wrestling with these issues lately.
You know, I've actually long believed just what you just said. I think I learned it the hard way, though. When I came to appreciate, probably about 3 years into my being here, that not everybody belonged in that box. And that, so to not try to reach and change those people, they were doing excellent work in whatever it was they were doing. I think I've learned over time that there are times when I need to make connections with people that are in a different world because they're doing something that will benefit what we're doing. I think that's true for everybody that's here. In some sense, I might need to make connections with people who could care less about the urban mission, but their area of work would benefit the community and the work that we're doing. And so that's when I make the connection then. I will often say that there are people that I think should never leave the university, but they're doing excellent in their office. They're doing an excellent job at whatever it is they're doing in there. But one thing that I could do, for them is when I see the places where they've made connections to the life of the city, then I'll bring it out. Not expect them to do it. That I'll be that ambassador. They don't need to try to do anything to translate it for anybody else. I'll do that. Or we'll do that. Our team will do that for them. And I think that's where I see a more comfortable niche for us. I think anybody here, though, beyond the urban research mission, I think everybody who works here in any department has to recognize that we're part of the city and we're part of the neighborhood. And so we have responsibilities, just like we would if we were living next door to somebody. We do have some common things that regardless of the area of your work, you should want to deal with. But it doesn't necessarily mean your research has to go that way. All of those people who teach here in those other areas want students. And so at the very least, they want to be viewed positively by the city that may send people here. I think we also have the ability to demonstrate how this could be applied in different settings, both even in the global setting. But a lot of what I've learned about working with community workers and the reasons we bring them in popular education or things like that are from models that are actually international. So I do think that we've learned from other countries, and other people can certainly learn from us, that makes our neighborhood a little bit bigger. But beyond that, even if we didn't have this urban research thing or the Great Cities Commitment, I would say that this institution, state-supported institution, has a responsibility to do something for the taxpayers that support it. And we all may do something a little differently, but we do have that responsibility because they pay us in some way.
That's really helpful. Thank you. Well said. Well, thank you so much. See, that's fantastic.